Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. News of McClatchy's Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing last Thursday went viral, though it was not a surprise to people who have been watching the newspaper industry overall, and that company in particular. McClatchy is the second largest newspaper publisher in the country. It's a company owned by the McClatchy family of Sacramento. The first paper was put together in 1857. So the company is now reported to have more than $700 million in debt. It has been in heavy debt since acquiring the Knight Ridder newspaper chain in 2006. Yesterday, a judge ruled that mediation with McClatchy's creditors can begin in 2 weeks. On the phone now is Ken Doctor. He's a news industry analyst and the author of a book from 2010 titled Newsonomics, 12 New Trends That Will Shape the News You Get. Hi, Ken. Glad to have you on Insight.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Give me your reaction when you heard this bankruptcy news.
It's something I've been covering for the last quarter at least, and the signs of all the stress on McClatchy have been there for a long time. This debt has been whittled down since that Knight Ridder acquisition, but it's been a heavy burden on that company, and it has been a question whether it could make it through without a bankruptcy. And then we had the acknowledgement last fall that it would not be able to make a pension payment, and that turned out to be the factor that finally pushed them into bankruptcy.
We should be transparent. You worked for Knight Ridder, Ken, until it was sold to McClatchy in 2006. Is that correct?
No, I left the company in 2005. I left Knight Ridder. I worked for Knight Ridder newspapers as an editor and on the digital side for 21 years, and I left in 2005, the year before it was sold.
All right. What did you see happening with Knight Ridder, and what was your view then of McClatchy?
Well, it was funny. We were in San Jose. I was working for Knight Ridder Digital at that point, and we thought that there might be some kind of combination between Knight Ridder and McClatchy, and especially the CEO of McClatchy at that point was Gary Pruitt, and we could see some kind of merger where Knight Ridder would buy McClatchy, Knight Ridder being the second largest company at that point. And so in 2006, when all of a sudden Knight Ridder said to its investors, you're right, we need to maximize value and we're going to sell, it was a shock throughout the newspaper world. And then to have the smaller McClatchy buy Knight Ridder was a second shock. So it was surprising to everybody. And as it turns out, if you look at it in retrospect, it was the beginning of the downturn of newspapers right in that period, 2006, 2007, and then the Great Recession, 2009, really took the wind out of the industry, and it's never been the same.
I don't know how to untangle all those circumstances and factors, but let me try this question. If the recession hadn't hit in 2007, do you think this deal would have or could have worked for McClatchy?
No, I think the problems were seeded earlier, and these were problems basically twofold if we take that long view. Newspaper readership had been going down for quite a while, but going down slowly. TV made inroads into it. If you go back to 1955, the household penetration of daily newspapers was 103%, meaning that because of morning papers and evening papers, more than one per household. Going down, 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 but the industry was still making money. And then by the late 90s, we started having digital disruption. And the digital disruption, especially of the advertising business, the classified business first, started taking money out of the industry. And, of course, readers started migrating from print to digital. And so these were slower moving trends, but they were nicking the industry. You could see it in the numbers. And then what the Great Recession did was knock an industry on its heels. So when you have an industry that is already weakened, And on a bad trend line, even if the minor bad trend line, something like economic catastrophe, as that was, really did a lot of damage, took basically a fifth of all the revenues out in that year. And since that time, this industry has not grown year over year. So that's now 11 years since this industry has grown. So it's a long, long slide.
You said you worked for Knight Ridder's digital side then.
Yeah.
And I don't know to what degree in 2006 McClatchy had or was really envisioning a digital side. But there has been this criticism or voice that print didn't respond quickly enough to technology, to print, to the new platforms. Maybe you're suggesting that there couldn't have ever been a fast enough response to what the bigger industry was enduring.
Whether it was possible, we could probably debate for a long time, but it is absolutely true that the newspaper industry, once fat and happy, did not adjust. So you had aggregation, you had search, you had mobile, you had video, social, all these things came along. And as the major media in their cities, you would have thought, abstractly, they should have been the ones that would have figured some of this out and could have kept their place. But basically, the disruptors coming out of Silicon Valley beat newspaper companies and really TV companies, all old legacy media, to the punch in all of these areas. But the number one thing, even with all the changes in our lives and the industry we can see, is advertising. And that's where Google and Facebook are now taking 60 to 70 cents of every dollar in digital advertising, and digital advertising is the number one ad type in the country. So it's the loss of $30 billion a year in advertising money to the newspaper industry. Much of that has gone essentially to Google and Facebook through a number of intermediaries, really. But that's really the major drain we're talking about. Habits, yep, they've changed, but it's the advertising change that has really sapped the revenue and caused these huge disruptions and major cuts in newsrooms like The Bee.
Hmm. Used to be the classified ads were so much money moved into a print company. If anybody has had to place an obituary, and I don't know, Ken, if you've had this experience, it's remarkable how much of a revenue source obituaries must have become, because the prices sometimes are astronomical depending
on
the market.
They are astronomical.
Yeah.
Well, and if you look at papers, you know, we've seen written in the last year with a lot of the press woes, the question of news deserts of communities that simply don't have any paper left, but even more so, I think we see ghost newspapers that they still get printed, but to your point, you know, they will have three pages of obits, and it's not just the aging population. You know, this is the one big revenue source, as other revenue sources have gone away. So it also points to the fact that newspapers are still a preferred medium, basically, of people 65, 70, and plus. And they're living longer, and they're paying double or triple in many of their communities what they paid to subscribe compared to 5 years ago. But this is not, obviously, a growing market. It is a market in decline. And what we're seeing is, as I've covered this industry overall, is financial companies. And now we have Chatham Asset Management, which will take over McClatchy, and we have others with other companies. The financial companies are getting into this, which is a declining industry, and they're saying, we know how to take profits out of a declining industry. It's not a very appetizing thing for many people in business to manage down a business, but these financial companies are willing to do that. And that's going to be the major question, really, for McClatchy and the Bees here in California, of what is it going to mean to have the McClatchy family out of direction mm-hmm. of this company at this point, and to have a financial company in the driver's seat.
You're listening to Ken Doctor. He is a news industry analyst. His book from 2010 is Newsonomics. We could get to some specifics about your book, but I want to follow what you're saying right now.
Sure.
And you've been quoted about Chatham Asset Management, and they are not the only financial player right now that is either controlling or in a situation of controlling daily news. So a lot of people think that this company is going to be broken up and sold off because it'll be controlled by a hedge fund. What about that?
It could be. Basically, all alternatives will be on the table. So when we have leadership like McClatchy's, and this is true in the industry generally, These were families that came out of a geographic area. They had a civic mission in addition to running a profitable business. Now, with companies like Chatham, the question is simply, how do you maximize the revenue? If it is running McClatchy as the 30 papers that it is across the country and making money because it is a profitable company with close to $100 million a year in earnings, they'll do that. They'll run it. If it is better to merge it with another company and they can make more money over the next 2 or 3 years when they pencil that out, they'll do that. And yes, they could sell off selected properties, although that's getting harder and harder to do because so many of the operations of all these newspapers are now centralized. So a buyer is buying an uncertain prospect, of course, in a declining industry, but then a buyer oftentimes, and we've seen this in other places in the country, Boston, Los Angeles, and others, then has to basically recreate a business, recreate technology that has been centralized. So it's a dicey proposition to buy one of these at this point, and that, of course, makes it harder to sell. I think the greatest likelihood is that Chatham will look for a merger partner. Mergers whack a lot of headquarters staff, meaning people, executives, and that takes out a lot of cost. Taking out costs creates more profits. So we've had one major merger, which was completed in November between Gatehouse and Gannett Newspapers, creating the largest newspaper chain by far, 25% of all the circulation in the country. And I think we're seeing the same thing now in Chicago with the company MNG that runs a lot of papers in the Bay Area and L.A., really getting very close to Tribune and probably close to merger. And I think that it is likely that Chatham, if it already has not had those talks, is going to have those talks on merger. And then we'd see still a new ownership. The Chatham ownership, after it emerges from bankruptcy, might be a very short-term one.
I mentioned that the judge had ruled that mediation could begin in 2 weeks, and that was characterized as sort of a fast track. Does that mean that this process is going to move or could move quickly?
It could. That's what they wanted to do is what is called a pre-pack bankruptcy, where you go to bankruptcy court and say, we've talked to everybody, we've talked to all the creditors.
Right.
You know, it's a regrettable situation, but we all agree. This is the resolution of the debt and asking the judge to approve it. They could not get that done. But they still want to avoid kind of a full-blown bankruptcy interim, which can take months and months and months. And so what the mediation allows is basically the negotiations with the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is going to take over all of the pension obligations of McClatchy. This negotiations, really, of what is PBGC, this federal agency, going to get from McClatchy? It's going to get some money, not a lot, but it's going to get some millions of dollars, and it's going to get some equity, some shares in this new company. So the question really is going to be, how many shares is it going to get? How much money is it going to get? And it's also contesting, it's kind of arcane, but it's contesting how Chatham, which is the major lender and the major investor, restructured its debt with McClatchy 2 years ago. But out of that, McClatchy would hope that they can get a resolution, which they have not been able to get through talks for several months, get that resolution. The other creditors are pretty well in line other than other pensioners. There are other pensioners that are contesting it. But they would hope to get this still done in 60 days and then basically be able to focus again on the operation of the newspapers.
So McClatchy has reassured everyone that newsrooms will stay intact in the interim. The papers will continue to go out in print and digitally the way that they were. What do you think happens after that? And what would a subscriber want to do at this point?
There isn't really much to do at this point. They've got lending, essentially interim lending, to make sure they can have a smooth operation, and that will continue. So, in a sense, this is almost like a little quiet period. It might be 30 days, it might be 60 days, The McClatchy newsrooms have absorbed, like newsrooms around the country, lots of cuts. And those subscribers have noticed writers and columnists disappearing, as they have across the country. That's not going to pick up any speed, I think, during the bankruptcy proceedings. And it's basically wait and see for the journalists at the papers and for the readers. And then the question is, what happens to these papers afterwards? What one would hope is that some ownership might emerge that would reinvest in these papers, as we've seen at the L.A. Times, the Boston Globe, the Star Tribune. It is unlikely that Chatham is going to make a major investment in that from its own background, but that would be the greatest hope. But at this point, there isn't anything to do but wait and see what happens.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Ken Doctor about the McClatchy Company bankruptcy filing, which was announced last Thursday. We'll post a link to Ken's website. His book from 2010 is Newsonomics, and he talked about trends. You did talk about trends, Ken, that you said are going to shape the news you get, a biggie being technology. I think you're a big fan of the technology changes, aren't you?
Well, the technology changes in our entire world are ones that we have to accept. And most everybody listening here, we're all using mobile phones as a primary source of communication, of news and information. And there's a lot of wonderful things that have come out of the digital revolution. What news companies need to do, especially as we're into the 2020s now, is harness that technology to do and distribute their journalism. And the ironic thing, even though I've seen such loss in local newspapers across the country, the New York Times, for instance, and I've covered national as well as local, the New York Times now has almost 5 million subscribers, which is three times what it ever had at the height of print. So it is the mastering of this technology to get more reader subscriptions, to produce more journalism, more high-powered journalism, visual journalism, investigative journalism. When it's used that way, and then you use it to distribute your work, it can work and it can actually build a bigger business. The tragedy here is that local newspaper companies, by and large, either did not invest early on in the technology or didn't have the vision to deploy it. And then, because the world changes very quickly, they ran out of money, and they are not investing enough at this point to do the kind of things that the New York Times and the Washington Post are doing. But technology is the basis of much of the news industry, and in a very good way when well used.
To back up your point about growing readership, in July of 2018, I talked with Lauren Gustus. She had been named at that time the new West Region editor of the Sacramento Bee. She's still with the Bee. And she was talking about supporting local journalism. She said the Bee already at that point was reaching more people than the paper ever had, and that the audience was growing. But there was a target of getting 60,000 digital-only subscribers, and the paper at that point had 15.
Right.
So tell me about a business model for funding print journalism on the digital side, I guess, that will work, and what the math is, at least as you know it to be, in terms of subscribers.
So it is an absolute fact that if you measure reach, meaning how many people you are reaching in a given month, of course, digital media allows you to reach far more people than you could ever do in print. And let's remember, the old print model was not as mass a model as the internet can be, because you know we can type in a few words and we get to any site. It was always a paid medium. So the problem is that you can have a huge audience, a digital audience, but if you only get 2% or 3% of that audience to pay for the journalism, it doesn't do you much good. You get a little advertising money off of that mass audience, but you need digital subscribers. McClatchy has grown a lot. I think its number is 200,000 across the country, but of course that is 30 newspapers. So the local newspapers, who are all trying to sell digital subscriptions, have run into this wall. They say to people, buy a digital subscription, and generally for younger people, people who don't have print, and because they have cut back on their news content so much, and oftentimes their mobile products are nothing special, it is a tough value proposition for consumers. So consumers will pay for Netflix, they'll pay for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and many other things now, but they're finding it's a tough value proposition. On the other hand, if we compare New York Times now has 50% more journalists than it had 7-8 years ago, produces a lot more content, has a great product, and for $15 a month, you get real value. It is hard for local news companies at this point, lacking funds as much as they do, to offer either the content or the products. So we've seen this downward spiral.
Well, plus the Daily jumped in with a podcast offering as well that's hugely popular.
Huge,
again, requires additional staffing and additional newsroom, but it's another place to reach a digital audience.
Exactly. And that's what that, and what that has done for them is really what we call discovery. Many people, especially the Daily pulls in a lot of younger people into the Times who didn't really know about the New York Times before. But they made that investment. I covered that from the beginning. They just had 5-6 people at the beginning doing it. Now they have, I think, in the 20s doing that, and it's a major franchise. We have not seen that kind of success on a local level. And to be sure, the Internet does reward scale. It is better to be a national global player like the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times than it is to be the Sacramento Bee. Yet a lot of the techniques that we see at that national global level have been really imperfectly applied locally. Again, partly investment, partly vision, even though we have, and I think it's really important to point out in Sacramento and across the country, McClatchy papers continue to distinguish themselves in enterprise and investigative reporting. There's no doubt the resources have dwindled. But there has been more of a commitment from McClatchy Papers to get into serious issues, to do investigations, than a lot of peer newspaper chains at this point. And I'm afraid that could be lost as this bankruptcy washes out.
Yeah, it's a hard point to raise up and highlight in the midst of what looks like the bigger sinking ship. But I think as you keep alluding to, we'll see there are a lot of answers that need to come out of this. By the way, we did reach out to McClatchy to have Lauren Gustus join us again on the show. We couldn't make that happen today, but we continue to try. Her phrase at that point was, we have to have a plan for a sustainable future. If McClatchy isn't parceled out and sold off, is there a sustainable future here that can be created in, perhaps as you suggested, a merger partner or some other configuration?
It potentially, yes. Unfortunately, the marketplace, if we define sustainable as no more cuts to the newsroom, actually building up what the content and product is of these local papers so they can do more in their communities, we don't have that from these mergers and acquisitions. What we see in the mergers and acquisitions is more cutting, mainly non-newsroom cutting, but we do not see additions to the newsroom. Really, to create that model, and use the best regional models in Boston and Minneapolis at this point, you have long-term owners there. These are wealthy people, billionaires, who have bought those papers, who have reinvested in those papers. They put in millions of dollars. They have actually added to the newsrooms marginally. But they've also said, we're not going to take profits out of here, or very minor profits in Minneapolis. We're going to reinvest. This is a 10-year strategy, and we're going to continue to sell more of those digital subscriptions. They're up to more than 100,000 in Boston, I think approaching 150,000 and 50,000 in Minneapolis. And they are more stable enterprises, but they do take, it takes deep-pocketed owners who really have a civic mission as well as a business sense. And so there's just, there's something like 642 billionaires in the country now. It's a lot of them, but only three or four of them own newspapers. If we find the right one, I kind of call it billionaire bingo. If you find the right one, your newspaper can be secured and maybe brought into the future. But across the country, the mergers and acquisitions usually just mean slowing the decline a bit, but still maintaining the management of a declining property.
Thanks so much for making time for us.
You're
welcome. It's been, I think, a really important conversation to have across the country, and in particular here in Sacramento, as you know.
Sure.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Ken.
Yep.
Ken Doctor is a media watcher. He is the author of Newsonomics. You can find a link to his website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.